Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/watsonassistant.
What's up? Sedano with you here on 710 ESPN, presented by Progressive Insurance. All our guests appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Coming up at 10:30, we will talk to Chargers General Manager Tom Telesco. At 11, we did find Cam Akers, the Rams' second-round pick, 52nd overall running back out of Florida State. He'll join us at 11. And at 11:40, Dave McMiniman will join us, and he's going to be giving us the Straight Talk. Straight Talk Wireless runs on the same network while saving up to 50%. Get the unlimited plan with 25 gigs of high-speed data and 2G for $45 a month. No contract. Straight Talk Wireless. No contract. No compromise. So the reason we're going to talk to Dave McMiniman is because he broke a story, I don't know, man, in the middle of the night, basically, that the Lakers are talking to Mayor Eric Garcetti about reopening their facility before May 15th, which is technically when the stay-at-home orders are running through at the current moment. So here is the snippet from ESPN.com. The Los Angeles Lakers have been in touch with L.A. Mayor Eric Garcetti to discuss the possibility of opening their facility before the shelter-at-home order expires. The club reportedly held a conference call on Monday outlining the safety measures and protocol that players must follow when workouts resume at the UCLA Health Training Center in El Segundo. What was I telling you yesterday? And it's interesting because yesterday I told you that the NBA was talking about finding places that are already looking towards opening their businesses to make sure that their players have a facility to go to. Now, I told you that the reports from Woj and others were very cautious in making sure that they were saying that nothing was imminent. And they even reported that the teams in some cases were a bit hesitant that they would be able to pull off such measures. Now, the Lakers clearly feel confident that they can, because since the stay-at-home order is through May 15th, they're like, wait a second, we don't want to lose any edge that we can get. And clearly the players must feel the same way, because they've had the conference call with the players. They've had the conference call with the staff. They've had the conference call with the mayor. And they feel like, hey, we are ready to start individual workouts, which, as I told you, I thought all along was going to be a precursor to us eventually, I don't know how soon, but eventually getting to more structured team workouts. I don't think we're there yet. I think we're several weeks away from even the possibility of that. But I believe, and I've been telling you over and over, that this would be the first step. And here we are. Because the Lakers are trying to break the glass ceiling in this particular situation, as long as they can make sure that they can maintain the health of their players and staff, and they feel confident they can. And it's just the beginning of a slice of normalcy that could be on the horizon. And we'll talk to Dave McMiniman in the 11 o'clock hour. We don't have an exact time yet, but we'll have him on in the 11 o'clock hour. It could be 11:40, it looks like, but it could be earlier. So make sure you stay tuned for that. And he'll have all the details on that stuff. But I felt pretty good about this yesterday when I was talking about it, just based on, look, no real hardcore information, but just hearing stuff and understanding some of the logic and thinking behind some of the league's thoughts, some of the team's thoughts, some of the players' thoughts. I don't just come out here, guys, particularly when it comes to the NBA, but really any sport, unless I'm blatantly telling you that I'm recklessly speculating. Usually when I give you these opinions, they're based on some version of things that I'm hearing. Now, I'm not reporting any of this stuff. I'm just telling you, I feel confident based on just conversations that I hear about. And I think that things are trending in a better direction. And it's been a terrible, terrible situation. And I understand the league's position, not just the NBA, but Major League Baseball and anyone else for that matter, about the morality of all of this. People are dying. People are getting sick still in large numbers. Not as large maybe as they once were in some places, but still large numbers. So it is a fine line that these leagues and these teams need to walk. But I do think that for the betterment of everyone, as long as the public can get the testing they need, and I think that slowly we're getting into that, headed in that direction, as I talked about yesterday, I think that the teams and the leagues are starting to take notice. And this was stuff that Jeff Passan, for example, who was on with us 2 weeks ago, was saying that Major League Baseball felt this way, that in May they would have way more tests and that they could be on route potentially to starting their season. We'll get to more of Major League Baseball in a second. But look, not everyone feels this way. Brian Windhorst, ESPN NBA insider, friend of the program, is a bit conflicted. He was on his Hoop Collective podcast and talked about kind of the NBA and what's going on and if any of this is in its best interest.
I'm not sure that the NBA wants to do this. I mean, all I've heard from Adam Silver is, number one, the health and safety of our players is number one. Number two, we're not going to make any changes to anything until the doctors who we are consulting say it's okay. And, you know, I think they've been talking about listening to the WHO and the CDC, and I haven't seen them say that. And number three, you have this problem with certain teams in some states being allowed back in, certain teams in some states not being allowed back in. I don't know what they're going to do, but this is a mess.
It is a mess. But again, no one thought this was going to be easy. So I would push back a little bit on Brian there. And I'm sure he would agree if he was on. I mean, I don't want to take what he's saying out of context by any stretch of the imagination. But yeah, it's a mess. We knew this was going to be a mess. The entire world is a mess right now. But at some point, the entire world, with the right safety precautions, listening to the scientists, listening to the medical professionals, will have to piece it all back together. And sports will be a part of that. And Adam Silver did say on that conference call with the president, with all the other commissioners, that the leagues, plural, not just the NBA, all of them, will feel the need, since they kind of really got this thing started, the awareness of shutting things down, they want to be the ones to bring it back. And I think that they will be. And I think this Lakers situation is a step in that direction. Maybe not enough steps, right? Like, I think we need 100 steps, but this is one or two steps in the right direction. And again, it's all about little by little piecing it all together, slice of normalcy. And it's on the horizon. Speaking of which, I mentioned Major League Baseball a second ago. Jeff Passan on SportsCenter yesterday about where Major League Baseball players and executives have their minds right now.
There's incentive for both sides financially to get in there. And the hope is that the more time you wait, the more robust testing becomes. Testing is such a huge issue here because if this plan is going to be implemented, if any plan is going to be implemented, there need to be a number of tests and tests that are not being taken away from frontline healthcare workers as well as the sick.
What have I been saying? What has he been repeating? What have I been repeating that he's been saying to us on these very airwaves, on this show? That's what Major League Baseball thinks, that they'll have enough testing for themselves, but they're not going to take the backlash, Major League Baseball, nor the NBA, nor any of these groups and leagues. The NHL, the MLS, NFL even, college sports. Until there's enough testing, and the magic number from what the medical community says is 500,000 tests a day, until we get there, then we are going to be in this, for lack of a better term, purgatory that we're in when it comes to sports. However, as I mentioned, within the last 10 days, we've gone from 150,000 tests to 300,000 tests a day. That's a significant jump. The jumps need to continue to be significant. But if that trend continues, I think Major League Baseball may end up being right, which is what Passan said there and weeks ago on this show, which is by the end of May, we may be in a position, according to the health officials that Major League Baseball spoke to getting our slice of normalcy back. And baseball may be playing, And then eventually basketball could potentially resume. And again, they're going to, no fans, we know that. Bubble cities, biospheres, whatever you want to call it. But I think that that's the direction we are clearly starting to head in. Again, it's a long walk. All right? It's a climb up a steep hill. But I believe the climb, if it hasn't already happened, we're gearing up for the climb. And that's good for everyone. Good for sports, but certainly it means that the country is also getting what they need to. Speaking of getting needs, we spent a lot of time yesterday arguing about needs when it came to football. Do you draft for need? Do you draft best player available? Well, the Chargers GM is going to join us, Tom Telesco, at 10:30. Cam Akers, the running back for the Rams, who I think fits both, is going to join us at 11 o'clock. And then Dave McMiniman will fulfill us on what the Lakers' needs are from the mayor and vice versa at 11:40. But the Chargers, getting back to them and their needs and football, they had a need for a face of a franchise. Did they draft a franchise QB? I think maybe. I think the kid they drafted needs a little work. But I don't think he has to play right away. Because they've got a guy that they feel like can manage the game plan, who Anthony Lynn has coached before and designed an offense for before, and they feel like they can believe, they can trust in their current quarterback, Tyrod Taylor. Here's Anthony Lynn on Tyrod.
I have a lot of confidence in Tyrod Taylor, but it will be a competition. You know, unless you're one of these, unless you're John Elway or Joe Montana or Phillip Rivers or one of these guys that's a bona fide Hall of Famer, you know, I'm just going to get you through camp and rest you for the season. You know, I don't see this being that type of situation. It will be a situation where these young men are going to show up and compete. And Tyrod Taylor has no problem doing that.
Yeah. And look, if I were banking on this, Tyrod Taylor is going to be the starter in week one and probably beyond that, especially if they're winning because they've got a good running game. They can play defense and that's going to be their recipe. And they can bring Herbert along slowly. And again, just little by little, they're putting his name on the marquee. It may not be week one. It may be one of those marquees that, you know, is like only got a couple letters. But every week, it may be an extra letter. J, 1 week. U, another week. S, another week. T, another week. I, and so on and so forth. Here's Anthony Lynn on Justin Herbert being the eventual successor and the future franchise QB.
It's nothing really to not like about the young man. He answered a lot of questions about himself. He had a heck of a senior season. He won the Rose Bowl. He went to the Senior Bowl and was MVP there. Went to the Combine, had an outstanding Combine and interview. I tell you, when he walked into the room at all 6'6", you know, to watch him on the field and the way he moves around, that was pretty impressive to see that he was such a big man. And then he had a pro day. So, he did everything that we needed him to do. And we're very confident in our decision with him and him being our future franchise quarterback.
So he feels good about the current situation. They feel it's stable, and they clearly feel good about their future. And we'll ask Tom Telesco about all that at 10:30. Greg Bergman, are you excited to hear that the Dave McMiniman report that the Lakers and the mayor are talking about potentially kind of opening up the facility and kind of getting this thing rolling?
Yeah, I don't see why I shouldn't be. I like hearing these plans. It gives me hope. It lets me know that something is about to happen or is on the way to happening. They understand what's happening. They know that they have to think of letting people know it's not that it's all of the safety and not taking away tests from frontline workers. They know all that stuff is first. But I want to hear the plans. I want the hope that eventually it'll get back.
What do we have on Number Mania today? We've got some battles today. Speaking of battles, right?
Yeah, Number Mania is really, really good today. Mostly the number we have 32 and 33. So yeah. I kind of have a feeling which way our listeners are going to go with Magic and Kareem. But 32 is really, really interesting.
Yeah.
You have Magic Johnson, Sandy Koufax, Marcus Allen, Jonathan Quick, who won two titles for the Kings, Bill Walton when he was with the UCLA Bruins, and he was one of the best players in college basketball history. Mm-hmm. That's a really strong – and I mean, you can put Blake Griffin in there if you – feel like
no,
it, but I don't know. He didn't win anything, so no. Yeah. But the rest of them all did win, and they won a lot with while in LA. So that's a tough one.
And you can vote at ESPN Los Angeles for the best player to ever wear the number 32 in LA sports history. That's up right now at ESPN Los Angeles. Coming up next, speaking of Los Angeles, Draymond Green is talking trash about your Los Angeles Lakers. We'll tell you what that's all about and how Patrick Mahomes is the cheat code and everyone's chasing him. We'll get to all that coming up. Tom Telesco, the Chargers GM at 10:30, Cam Akers at 11, Dave McMiniman at 11:40. It's the Sedano Show on 710 ESPN. Sedano with you here on 710 ESPN. Presented by Progressive Insurance, Progressive's Home Court Explorers, changing the way you buy home insurance now that you can go online. You can do it yourself, get a custom quote, save both time and money. Learn more at progressive.com. So before I get to Draymond Green trash talking the Lakers, today is National Superhero Day, and it's trending on Twitter. It's the number one thing trending in Los Angeles today. And Greg Bergman asked the question of Laura. Laura, he asked you what your favorite superheroes were, and you answered...
I said between Captain America and Batman.
And then, Greg, you said?
I said those are okay, but Batman is not a superhero.
And what does not make Batman a superhero? Like, I am curious. I've always heard this argument, but I feel like it's ridiculous. But go ahead.
He's not super in any way. I mean, I understand that he's really smart and he has a ton of money and he has the greatest gadgets of everyone, but there's nothing that has genetically altered him to become a superhero. He is a hero. He is absolutely one of the greatest heroes of all of them in comic book world, but he is not a superhero.
No, here's where I would push back on you, and I'd love the audience to weigh in on this at 877-710-ESPN, 877-710-3776. And Laura, you can hear me out here too. Yes, he doesn't have like these pseudo-scientific magical powers to make him a superhero, like these amazing powers. But I would say that a superhero is a person who does heroic deeds that has the ability to do them in a way that a normal person couldn't do them. So in order to be a superhero, you need a power that's more exceptional than any power a normal human could possess. So he does have all of that. Like, just because he can't read your mind or he can't, you know, blow cold like Superman or have laser beams come out of his eyes like Superman or whatever. Or have super strength like Wonder Woman. Like, I still think he's a superhero.
Right. Well, everybody in the Marvel universe for the most part is, and it's a little bit different between Marvel and DC, but DC, like where he is, he doesn't have that super ability besides being super smart, which
okay.
is, you know,
well,
I don't know.
We can table this because we thought Tom Telesco was joining us at 10:30, but apparently he's on the line right now.
Who's his favorite superhero?
General Matt. We will ask him. We'll ask him. Tom, I apologize. Today is National Superhero Day. There was a heated debate in the most recent break. But while we have you on the line and we want to talk to you about your team, is there a Tom Telesco favorite superhero?
Oh my gosh, I'm the exact wrong person to talk about with that. I have no idea. I've not read a comic book in my life.
Really? Like you didn't grow up watching like Batman or Superman or anything ever?
You know what? I guess I'm just sports, football, basketball, baseball. That was really it. That's the way I was brought up.
Your superhero was Dan Fouts, right? Or LaDainian Tomlinson?
Probably Jim Kelly and... those guys, Andre Reed.
Yeah, I feel you. Right, Thurman Thomas, who, by the way, gave me nightmares. I grew up a Dolphins fan, and I could still remember that game where the Bills had three runners rushing in a playoff game for over 100 yards. Still gives me nightmares to this day, okay? And I'm 42
That's
years
right.
old.
That's right.
So, Tom, let me ask you this, and thank you so much for joining us. Congratulations on your draft and everything you guys were able to accomplish. But you know what's funny to me is – you know, all the stuff that happens before the draft, not just from your perspective, the preparation, and I want to get into some of the nuances of how different this was for you guys too, but just all the smoke screens that are out there. It feels like there's a million different things being put out into the zeitgeist and the atmosphere, and it feels like 99% of it is untrue. How does all that materialize?
I don't know. I just think there's just so much media nowadays. Print, TV, internet, obviously. Everybody has to have something to talk about. So, yeah, I mean, and then the closer you get to the draft, I think certainly with this year, since there's no baseball, there's no NBA, there's no NHL going on, we're the only game in town to talk about the draft. So there's just a lot of stories of rumors out there. But from the seat that I'm in, you know, when I hear a rumor, I do have to process it in my brain and kind of think, hey, look, that may sound off the wall, but hey, if that happened, how would that affect us? And that's a lot of the work we do in the days leading up to the draft. The problem is the closer you get to the draft, the information is less and less accurate. It just seems like, you know, January, February, you can get some good information, but the closer you get, I mean, look, no GM is going to tell other people what they're planning on doing. Not a GM in the league is going to do that. So you do have to measure all the things that you read, make some educated guesses based on where those teams' depth charts are, what their style is. You know, our pro scouts do a lot of work trying to determine what teams are going to do. But you just have to be prepared. So there's a lot of work that goes into it.
Which was the rumor that was out there that made you laugh the most? Because I can tell you what mine was, but I'm curious to hear what your thoughts were.
Man, I mean, there were just so many. I don't know even if I can remember a specific one, but even the ones that sound off the wall, you still have to go through the process because, you know, you just don't know how other buildings work. You don't know how they operate. All of our draft boards are different. Just like all the media that do draft boards, their draft boards are different than ours. So everybody values players a little bit differently. So even if you hear something that you may think a little bit off, you still have to be prepared that that may happen.
So my favorite one was involved you guys that allegedly you and the Dolphins were in cahoots for not trading up to because you knew that the teams ahead of you didn't need quarterbacks and that you guys would eventually get the quarterbacks that you wanted anyway. That was to me the wildest one I heard.
Oh, some collusion between myself and Chris Greer, huh?
Yeah.
No, that didn't happen. I think, you know, so I was asked the other day why I thought there weren't more trades up in the first part of the first round and did it have anything to do with the fact that everybody was drafting from home and it may be hard logistically to do it. I didn't see it like that. I really think, at least for us, we had a really strong group at the top of the draft, probably 10 or 11 deep, that we felt were top players, would be top five players. And I think a lot of teams had a similar group, so there just wasn't a need for somebody to come up into the top five and get a guy that they wanted because you could sit wherever you were, you know, 8, 9, 10, and still get a really premium player. And that's probably the reason why.
Tom Telesco, Chargers general manager, joining us here on the Sedano Show on 710 ESPN. When you were evaluating your quarterbacks, what was the thing that stood out to you the most about the guy you drafted and the guy that went before you?
You know, different styles, but both highly productive, obviously. And we're very lucky this year, you know, for a year that we're picking in the top 10 to really have, you know, and Joe Burrow as well, have, you know, three really big-time quarterbacks. And with not only physical skills, but the makeup you look for in the position. And really all three guys had the type of makeup as far as the toughness, physical toughness, mental toughness, adversity. But Justin with us, we just think the physical skills are undeniable. I mean, he's a big, big kid. You know, when you see him, at, you know, 6'5", well, actually 6'6", 235, 240 pounds, but very athletic and fast and tough. And obviously big, big, strong arm. But we liked his makeup in terms of his quarterback intangibles. He's smart. He's accountable. He's very competitive. And he knows he has room for growth as well. So when he comes in this league, it's going to take some time and some work, but he has that work ethic and drive you need at that position. He has some leadership ability. And really, I mean, honestly, all those three guys at the top, they're wired very similar as far as off the field, as far as the preparation and the leadership aspect. So it's a really good group.
Tom, there may not be an answer to this right now, but what is the timeline for his maturation? Will he be allowed to compete right out of the gate?
Well, yeah, I think you let every player compete. Do we have a hard timeline? Not really. And it's even harder to tell because obviously right now we don't have an off-season program where we're on the grass practicing. So I don't know, to be honest with you. I don't have an answer for that. I know we're very happy that we have Tyrod Taylor and comfortable with him. So his teammates respect him. He respects his teammates. He knows our offense very well. So he's really far ahead of Justin in that regard. But once we get on the field, everybody will compete. But we'll see. Like I said, we don't have a hard time frame of when or where. But, you know, I told Justin, whenever your opportunity arises, you got to be ready to go. You know, when that opportunity comes up, I don't really know yet.
Tom, what about Tyrod drew you guys to him?
Yeah, I tell you what, he's a player that we had watched for a long time, and when he was in Baltimore, the coordinator there was Jim Caldwell, and Jim Caldwell was the head coach for the Colts when I worked there, and I'm close with Jim. I have a huge amount of respect for him as a person and as a football evaluator, and I'd always remembered him saying how sharp, how smart, what a great leader Tyrod is, and then just his, you know, his movement skills, his ability to move outside the pocket, very accurate, protects the football. He told me all this before Taylor went to Buffalo and showed that as a starter. So that then when he went to Buffalo and played very well there, took them to the playoff and showed all those same skills that Jim had told me about a couple of years beforehand. So you know, we were very lucky to have Phillip Rivers. Phillip never missed a practice, never missed a game. But I didn't want to be in a position where if something happened to Phillip, if by chance he got hurt, that all of a sudden our offense couldn't function and couldn't move the football. So we really made a concerted effort last year to find, you know, the best quality backup we can. And, you know, I wanted a backup that was a starter quality. And we got lucky just the way, you know, the chairs fell last year that we're able to get Tyrod, get him, and the fact that he knows our offense, or knows our head coach very well from Buffalo, that helped too. But to get him in the fold, and I'm so glad he chose to come here last year, and you know, we're happy with them moving forward.
Couple more questions here with Tom Telesco, the general manager of the LA Chargers, with us here on the Sedano Show on 710 ESPN. What was the attribute that, outside of size, I know you discussed that earlier, but what was the specific attribute from Herbert that you were like, wow, I didn't know that about him just watching him play on film?
You know, I think the fact that he is really, really mentally tough. So, you know, he could have a bad series, he could have a bad quarter, and was able to put that behind him, come back, and then still make plays. It just seemed like, you know, if something happened, something bad happened earlier in the game, it just didn't affect him. And that's a great trait to have for quarterbacks, certainly defensive corners too, if you get beat from time to time. But I love that with him, it didn't matter what happened beforehand. We're going to the next series, and we're going to move the football. We're going to score points. So that really stood out to me, that the fact that he could move the team in different ways, both with his legs and with his arm. And just watching how his teammates react to him, how they rally around him, how much that coaching staff at Oregon loved Justin Herbert, and, you know, saw him as he was their, you know, obviously a big leader for them. So, you know, all those things that can't necessarily always see on tape, but to see how he reacts to different situations was pretty cool to see.
Tom Telesco with us here, Chargers GM. When you look at the rest of your draft, Josh Kelly, the kid you drafted out of UCLA, local kid from here, what stood out most to you when you were looking at him?
Sure. Well, we saw a good amount of him at UCLA, obviously, but the last 2 years and in the Pac-12. And then we saw him in the Senior Bowl. I thought he was excellent at the Senior Bowl as well. So he's just been a very steady, productive performer. And he has good size. He's strong, very strong in the lower body, and has great feel and vision and instincts running the ball inside. And, you know, Anthony Lynn's been a running back coach in this league for a long time before he became a coordinator and then a head coach. No one knows the position better than he does. And he loved Josh Kelly. He loves his skills. He's a different style than Justin Jackson and Austin Eckler, and we like having that in our backfield where we can rotate different players in. And, we're very happy to get Josh. Very well coached, too. I mean, pass protection, which is sometimes an issue for running backs in college. He does that pretty well, and I know he's willing to do it. We're happy to add him.
And lastly here, obviously your division is always extremely tough. Look, you got the Super Bowl champs there now, right? Patrick Mahomes at times almost feels like a cheat code out there the way he plays. How do you feel your team stacks up against them at the moment?
You know, it's hard to tell because it really doesn't matter on paper, but, you know, we know what Kansas City is. And then look at what Mike Mayock and John Gruden are doing in Oakland, and then what Elway and Vic Fangio are doing in Denver. I mean, I'm biased, but I think it's the toughest division in the league. But that's not always a bad thing either, because I think that's going to prepare us with those division games. It can prepare us for the rest of our schedule. Kind of raises the bar of everybody in the division. And but no, those teams are all good teams, and we know what Kansas City is. I mean, Kansas City is just highly, highly talented, and you know, one of the best coaches, if not the best coach in the league, with Andy Reid. So, yeah, it's a challenge. But all we can do is look at it on paper right now, and paper really doesn't mean a whole lot. We need to get out. God, I can't wait to get on the field for some OTAs, hopefully at some point, and then get on the field for training camp to start working and developing, especially a lot of our younger players that are second and third year players, to see them develop and hopefully take that jump to be bigger contributors.
Tom Telesco, GM of your LA Chargers, with us here on the Sedano Show on 710 ESPN. Tom, always a pleasure. Thanks for making time for us. Appreciate it.
Hey, I really appreciate you guys having me on. Have a great day.
You too. Take care. There he is, Tom Telesco, with us here. All right, let's catch up on that. Let's get back into the superhero debate, too, because I think Bergman's wrong. I think he may have to take an L. I'm going to see if the audience will let him take an L. We'll get into all that on the other side, so stick around. Sedano, 710 ESPN. Sedano with you here on 710 ESPN, presented by Progressive Insurance. All our guests appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Thanks to Tom Telesco, the Chargers general manager, who joined us a little early there. Supposed to be 10:30, or at least we thought. At least I thought it was 10:30. It was 10:15, I guess. But that segment brought to you by My Computer Career, training for a better life. So Bergman, he even gave your Raiders a little props when I asked him about the division. Look at that.
I know. Look at him. Good job. He understands the audience here in L.A.
He also doesn't want to give any bulletin board material. Right. I feel like there's that. Exactly. He's a savvy person. I did forget he was from Buffalo originally, but... strange. He didn't not even an answer on the superhero. Like, his superhero was Jim Kelly.
I know. And then you try to throw him out with Thurman Thomas.
Yeah. But now you made the bold statement that
it's not bold.
Batman is not a superhero. And the audience wants to weigh in on that. And also, speaking of superheroes and villains, Draymond Green taking a shot at the Lakers. Well, you know what? I want to get into that when we have a little more time, because it's going to be a quick segment. So we'll do that in the next segment. I want to let you know what Draymond said, because there's a number of things that Draymond's been saying lately that have irked some people. But we'll get into that. And we'll also kind of fill you in on the latest on the Lakers possibly opening their facilities, which is good news potentially for basketball coming back. But let's go to the phones. We have people that want to chime in on this. We have Miko in Compton. What's up, Miko?
Hey, what's going on, Jason? Hey, Birdman's just using the wrong terminology. Birdman's saying Batman's not an alien or a mutant, but being an alien or a mutant doesn't qualify you. Magneto's a mutant, but he's not a hero.
Right.
The point of Superman is that this alien came and was raised, the Kents raised him, this good Kansas family, the Kents. They took him with human qualities, the good human qualities, and made this guy who could really kill everybody. But because of the human heroism, they raised him right, and he went on and got a regular job at the newspaper. And you, heroism is human. So what you're trying to say, like, you have super rich, you have super athletic, you have the super intelligent. Batman is a hero. Frontline workers who are fighting the coronavirus, they're heroes.
Yes.
Batman is a superhero.
Yes.
He has $1 billion to buy gadgets and fight. Heroism is human, not alien or mutant.
Miko, you are a great American. That's all I want to say, okay?
Look, Miko, the only thing that I would say to compare that to is that Magneto is not a hero. He is a villain. Magneto is a super villain. Joe, it has nothing to do with what, so he, alien, whatever it happens to be, he has powers. He is a super, super villain. He's not just a regular villain. He's a, like the Joker. The Joker is a villain. He's not a super villain. He is a villain, just like Batman is a hero. He is not a
regular
super
hero.
Regular
people are heroes. Bo Jackson is a hero. And
he is
Batman
a regular person.
Superhero.
Batman is a regular person. He has a
go
lot of
Go get him,
money.
Miko. Miko, tell him to go take an L.
He has more money than anybody else to make his gadgets. He has the gadgets, the ability to make. That's what's so great about Batman, by the way, is that we feel like if we had the money, we could be him.
Birdman, heroism is a human, good human quality. It doesn't come from mutants or aliens. Heroism is human, and Batman's a superhero because he's not just going to work and being. He's not like Jason being a hero, keeping the people entertained during this time.
Who's Jason? You mean George?
Birdman being a hero, works hard on the radio, take care of this. He's a super. He takes his $1 billion, doesn't have to do it.
Hey, Miko. What's the host's name? I think we lost him.
Yeah. It's okay. Jason Sedano with you here. That's my alter ego. That's my superhero ego.
There you go. You were bit by something. Like a cockroach. That would be what it would be.
I listen, I'm with Miko, though. Miko and Sedano 2020. A superhero is someone who does heroic deeds and has the ability to do them in a way that a normal person couldn't. I'm with Miko on this. Let's go to Mike in L.A. Mike, where are you on this?
I'm on Greg's side this time.
Thank you, Mike.
I believe Batman is my favorite character. But if you can do it, George, or Greg can do it, or I can do it.
Well, I can't.
You know, learn to be. You could. You could literally buy the stuff if you had $1 billion or your.
I mean, listen, I don't know if Ra's al Ghul would train me, but I'd think about it.
Exactly.
You know?
Right. But that's the thing. It's possible. With superheroes, it's not possible because they have some out of a worldly type issue. The spider superhero.
Gotcha.
I guess you know what I mean. So it's not something that you can like become like an NFL player. You can't exercise by all these gadgets. With the superhero, they have some kind of gift that normal people don't or normal heroes don't.
Got you. Got you, Mike. I appreciate the call. We got to run. We're up against it. But we'll continue this debate. It's raging on Twitter right now. I've posted it at Sedano, S-E-D-A-N-O. I put up a poll. People are fighting in my mentions. Go have at it. Call in to 877-710-ESPN, 877-710-3776. But coming up next, the Draymond Green is a villain, maybe a supervillain, and he's taking a shot at your Los Angeles Lakers. We'll be back in 2 minutes with the villain, Draymond Green, taking a shot at the Lakers. Sedano with you here on 710 ESPN. Man, people are fighting about this Batman thing in my Twitter mentions. Holy moly. You can vote at Sedano ESPN. Is Batman a superhero on National Superhero Day? I want to thank Tom Telesco, the general manager for the Chargers, who joined us a few moments ago. If you missed any one of our interviews, any day, but including the Tom Telesco interview, go check out the entire interview on demand section of the Sedano Show podcast brought to you by Capital One. Why settle for average? With Capital One, you can open a savings account with a rate 5 times the national average. Welcome to Banking Reimagined. What's in your wallet? Capital One, NA member, FDIC. Tune into The Last Dance, a behind-the-scenes look at the 90s Bulls dynasty. The series continues Sunday at 6 Pacific on ESPN television. Another 6 million of you watched it this past weekend. And listen to the wrap-up show with Sliwa and myself on the ESPN Los Angeles Twitter account immediately following the broadcast, presented by State Farm, AT&T, Cinco Tequila, and our friends at Coors Light. So, before we get back to the Batman thing, Draymond Green is, we were talking about superheroes and villains. He can be either, right? It just depends on who you root for. But I would say most fans, would it be safe to say, Greg, most fans view Draymond as a villain?
Oh, yeah. 100%.
Yeah, Draymond a villain, which is fine. I think he embraces that role. But Draymond Green went on a podcast recently and said, quote, Steph and I and Clay and our team was the best team ever. We would have destroyed Shaq and in the pick and roll. Steph and I would have killed him. Now, listen. While Steph Curry and Draymond Green was a great pick and roll combination, and while probably the weakest part of Shaq's game defensively was the pick and roll, if there's anyone that was going to destroy Shaq in the pick and roll on that team, it would have been when maybe Durant was there, you know what I'm saying? And if they wanted to run pick and roll, Durant and Steph. But I don't see Draymond as being that guy. Like, yes, maybe he would have gotten by Shaq because of a slight speed advantage, but Shaq's length and his girth and the way he uses his body, I think would have given him a clear-cut advantage. You could say that Shaq would have picked up a lot of fouls in that mythical scenario, but I still don't think the refs are going to foul Shaq out in every game. Like, I still think there are going to be games where they're going to be like, nah, Draymond, we're not going to let you get away with just incidental contact because he's 100 pounds heavier than you.
Yeah, if it's early on in Shaq's time, too, with the Lakers, Draymond would have been fouling out of those games.
Correct. Shaq would have killed him.
Would have destroyed them down low. And going with the triangle, slowing them down, not being able to let them just be running gun type team, it wouldn't have worked. I'm sorry. That team, Shaq and Kobe would have absolutely destroyed them. And you have a killer, an absolute killer with Kobe.
Yeah, look, I think it would have been close, especially when you have the Durant aspect of it, right? Like, I don't think that is a foregone conclusion by any stretch of the imagination, because if it's the Durant Warrior teams, it's going to be pretty hard. Like, you don't really have anyone that can guard Durant, right? Like, even Kobe, I don't think, could guard Durant on a constant basis. He's got several inches on him, you know what I mean? And can shoot over anybody in the league, basically. He's almost 7 feet tall. So I think that it would be tough. Now, I think Kobe could give him a run for his money at times when he maybe puts the ball on the floor. I think Kobe can redirect him other places. But that would be the challenge. Like, Robert Horry maybe would have to guard Durant. I think that would probably be the best bet on a regular basis. You know,
Rick
Kobe
Fox,
could,
maybe.
Yeah, Kobe could lock down Clay, I think, at times. But look, Clay's going to run you around screens, going to tire Kobe out. I think that some of that stuff, I think it would be a fascinating series. But to your point, like, for Draymond to call out Shaq specifically, okay, and you're right, like, I think that the Lakers have some guys they would throw at them, even though it would be, I think, a seven game series. I think that just Kobe and his ferocity, right, and his ability to get to the free throw line, right, I think that stuff is stuff that we don't talk enough about, and put pressure on them and put them in foul trouble. Plus Shaq, even though he may not be making all the free throws, putting the pressure on them, as you said. Like, how is Draymond Green going to guard Shaq? Like, how is, you know,
Zaza Pachulia,
Festus Ezeli going to guard Shaq? Shaq will take Festus Ezeli and use him as a toothpick, okay? Like, stop with that. Like, there is, so I like Draymond. I think Draymond is great. I think Draymond's a good player. I don't think Draymond's a superstar, since we were talking about superheroes, supervillains, super this, super that. I think Draymond's a good player. I think he's an all-star caliber player. I think he's the ultimate glue player, maybe like a Rodman, but better in the sense that he has an even further skill set, like a larger skill set than Rodman does. But he's not like a superstar. And he talks like a superstar. Now, don't get me twisted. I love it because it brings great content to the shows. And I'm curious to hear what Laker fans think about this, because I think it's patently absurd. At 877-710-ESPN. And you can weigh in on the superhero debate with Batman, too, if you'd like. But 877-710-ESPN, 877-710-3776. But I'm not the only one that feels this way about Draymond. Now, Charles Barkley, we have some sound. Now, we know that at times him and Draymond have been going at each other's necks, and he may be going a little harder at Draymond than most people, but I think the general idea is pretty spot on. Here's what Charles said on the Calling Cal podcast.
I'm not jealous of anybody. I like messing with him. I like him. I think he's a good player. I like his personality, but I get annoyed when these guys who are born into money think they're successful. I told you. He's like the worst member of the boy band who doesn't realize he's standing next to Justin Timberlake. When the girls are throwing panties at his head, he going to get hit by some drive-by panties, but they're really throwing panties at Justin Timberlake. I tell people, Draymond's a good little player, but without Kevin Durant, Clay, and Steph, he's just a good little player. You know, and he's a good role player, and I like him too. But it annoys me when these guys start talking about, well, they won something. Yeah, I mean, there's some guys who won stuff who play with Magic and Bird, but they don't go around telling them how great a player they are. They're just like, man, I'm lucky to play with Magic and Bird.
I mean, he's right. Like, I don't know if I'd go as far as some of the stuff that he's saying. Like, but is he the worst guy in the really famous boy band?
The drive-by panties line is one of my greatest lines I've ever heard from him. Yeah. It's so true, though, too. Like, he just happened to get in the way of them.
I mean, who is, like, is he Joey Fatone? Is that what he's saying? Like, is that?
I mean, I think Joey Fatone might be too big in that boy band. Who's? I mean, you actually know the name Joey Fatone,
right?
So therefore, he's not that one.
I like Joey Fatone. I thought he was great in My Big Fat Greek Wedding. Like, I'm a Joey Fatone fan, so I'm not going to blaspheme Joey Fatone. But I'm just curious. I almost want to get Charles on and ask him, which member of the boy band is he? Are you making fun of Joey Fatone? I want to text Charles and see what he says. But yeah, it's just weird. It's really, really weird. Like, I don't understand why Draymond would say something so ridiculous.
So here's all the NSYNC members, just to keep going with that. Justin Timberlake, J.C. Chazé, Chris Kirkpatrick, Lance Bass, and Joey Fatone. In all of this, he's either J.C. Chazé or Chris Kirkpatrick, because you're not remembering any of those names.
Right.
You know who Lance Bass is.
You definitely know Lance Bass and Joey Fatone. Justin Timberlake. Right, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Laura, who would he be? Who would Draymond be in the boy band of like all the famous boy bands? If you had to equate him to someone in a boy band from the 90s.
Okay, I'm going to go with NSYNC because it's my favorite. And it definitely has to be Chris K. Chris, I cannot say his Kirkpatrick. That's why I sent you that.
Yeah, I didn't even know there was a Chris Kirkpatrick in NSYNC. So there you go.
That's who he'd be.
All right, fair enough. All right, here's what we've got on the Is Batman a Superhero? There is a lot of infighting right now. Okay,
it's a very lot big of debate. It is a big debate, George. You've opened up a can.
Oh my God. I had no idea this was going to go this way. Now, I knew it was the number one trending thing in LA Twitter today, but I didn't think it was this. Here are just some of the responses. Batman is a rich psychopath.
he is.
That's from Peloton Poppy. Chester tweets me and says, I say yes because though in terms of actual definition, he doesn't qualify. He's written and portrayed as a superhero because a human, no matter how intelligent or well-trained, would be dead after being in the situations he's been put in. In comics, his training makes him super.
His training, look, anybody can make do those trainings.
No, not anybody can make it through the Ra's al Ghul training. Not everyone, no.
No, not everyone can, but there are people that can. So, no, it doesn't make him super. And according to the dictionary, we're going with the dictionary here, George. A superhero is a benevolent fictional character with superhuman powers, such as Superman. Superhuman powers. He does not have a superhuman power. And that's the problem. He's still amazing. He's still a hero. He's a vigilante. He's, you know, what everybody aspires to be.
Why do you hate Batman? We found out you hate the Rams yesterday. Now we find out you hate Batman.
Are you really going to go this route again?
Okay, like, I'm
this
just saying. The one? Does Bergman hate Batman and the Rams? 877-710-ESPN, 877-710-3776.
Can't even have it. You're like speaking, Mason.
Speaking of the Rams. Cam Akers, their newest running back, second round pick, 52nd overall, joins us next in 3 minutes.